This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang, taking you to 10 a.m. It is now 6 a.m. in the morning and Tuesday, the 4th of August.
Wow. So here we are. Well into the year. Lots of stuff happened. More to come, I'm sure. Here we are. We just exist from day to day. We just try and make it through, lurching from disaster to disaster.
Well, I guess COVID-19 has changed everyone's plans for the year. I mean, I was supposed to go here, I was supposed to go there, but literally I'm not going anywhere except Chuti Chuti Malaysia, which applies to everybody, right?
I'm supposed to go here, we'll go there, but I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, that's my tagline, literally.
So yeah, I had plans to go to India this year, September.
Let me guess, that's not happening, right?
Not happening, lah. I don't think they want me either. And I don't blame them.
Well, what to do? But you know, this morning, I think what we're going to be discussing, one of which is, despite the fact that this COVID-19, time continues to move on, right? So unfortunately, for some of us, middle age is here. So the question is, do you embrace it or fear it? So that's what I'm going to be talking about. What about you, Chuang?
Curiouser and curiouser, as Alice once said. I'm going to be talking about the addictive the addictive characteristics of bad news and why some people can't get enough of it.
Yeah, that's true. I have to confess, it can be very addictive. But if you want to weigh in on any of our conversations, you can. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We will be back after this song. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Ready for Love by Bad Company.
Ready for Love. That's a song I used to listen to in not that I used to go to a lot, like backyard cafe, back pub.
Yeah. In Sri Hartamas, right?
Filled with exactly the same kind of people we'll be talking about soon.
Yeah, very, very soon. Well, I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Koo Soo Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. And like what Chuang said, we're going to be talking about middle age, right? Sadly, or embrace it, fear it or embrace it. That's my tagline. But anyway, it's not so much talking about age per se, but talking about a company that is growing up or has grown up, right? And this is an article in The Economist. And it's about Google, whether it has outgrown its corporate culture, because the tagline is how to cope with middle age. And the point is, we all know Google started off two young guys, Larry Page, Sergey Brin. You know, they just kind of faffed about and boom.
Faffed about.
Google came, all right? And today, it made $34 billion in 2019,
yeah.
Right? And we saw the results yesterday. Amazing results despite COVID-19, stellar. But they, from what was originally probably just two or three guys working in their backyard or in the basement, now you're talking about one of the largest tech companies in the world. And when they went for listing in 2004, they said that they weren't going to be any conventional company. And remember, they used to have the most interesting tagline, which is, do no evil.
Difficult when you control everybody's data and you can peek into everybody's lives. You know, Google knows more about me than my mum does, because every single thing that
I do... Well, that says a lot about what you find, what you search online, Chuang.
Well, not that it's bad. You know, don't get all innuendo on me. Because they check my they've got access to my email, my surfing habits,
Your
docs. I view on YouTube, my documents, my files, you know. And my mum hasn't been privy to that kind of information since I was knee-high to a grasshopper.
That is true. I mean, just think about it. They control 90% of all search, whatever search that we do. I mean, they're that big, right? And not only that, they've also moved into things like driverless vehicles, delivery drones, robots. So it has grown to this tremendous size. And I think when they first started, they tried to have this very, very flat structure. I think all startups start that way, right? Where there's no real boss, everything is done on a committee basis. It's very committee as in like everything is consensus based.
Yeah.
You know, they try to please everybody. But when you get to a size where you've got, I think, 120,000 full-time employees around the world, excluding a lot of contract staff. Okay, so there are more contract staff than there are full-time employees.
Really? So yeah. It's double the size.
It's probably double the size. How do you manage that? So over time, I think to kind of make everyone feel as if they were still part of the Google family, I mean, their offices are legendary, right?
But who says they're not creative, right?
I think they are, but...
I think they still are. I mean, the kind of stuff that they churn out on... almost like on a quarterly basis. I mean, for example, like say Google Travel, right? Have you ever used Google Travel? Amazing. amazing, and it's so fast, so responsive, so good, you know, the kind of thing, right? And then you've got weather, you've got finance. These are all little things that they've never really fleshed out, but individually they're amazing, right?
But do you think when you get to a certain size, the reason why you did so well kind of gets lost in the way, right?
It
because
does.
You kind of have, the reality is this, why this article makes sense, in that the headline is it's middle age. Is it time for Google to grow up, or has it already grown up? It's
it
no
has.
Longer what it used to be.
Well, in internet age, it's 21 years old. But 21, you can multiply that by 7. In
like
their,
a dog, la.
Yeah, it's like a dog, right? but I would say that they're still very creative. They have reached, they're bumping their heads along the ceiling in terms of search engine or online advertising or, you know, your traditional businesses, right? But they're doing so many other things that I think the economist doesn't really understand unless you're inside. And it's very difficult unless you're inside, because there's a lot of things that they do which they cannot disclose. It could be quantum computing. It could be the next energy, renewable energy. It could be self-driving cars. It can be anything.
But I think it hasn't been an easy ride for them, because along the way, we've seen where Google employees have come together and protest against certain things that has happened within Google. There's also question marks about how creative things are, because there's no longer this complete flat structure that it used to be. And even then, they try to give some semblance to the consensus kind of decision making, but some argue that it actually ends up going nowhere and pleasing nobody. So promotions actually take forever, for example.
Yeah. So I think maybe one way forward for organizations as they mature to stay creative is to keep on trying new things, right? We can see that in Malaysia, that experimentation doesn't really happen. Okay, like for example, some media companies. I don't want to name them because it's a very small world, but one financial publication hasn't really experimented with new things. And as a result, they're still relying on their cash cow, right? Even till today, when that cash cow is obviously getting short of its milk, right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they don't want to put their balance sheet to use and experiment, even though they made a few mistakes in the past. And you can see it's the same thing in across industries. Some companies want to stay in property development. Some people want to stay in manufacturing. Some people want to stay in whatever it is, plastics, whatever. They don't want to experiment beyond, because it's just too comfortable in the mothership.
I think this is something that...
And I think Google doesn't fall prey to this, because they've got such a big balance sheet, because they churn so much money, they can do it.
Yeah, but I wonder how easy it is to manage a company this size, and whether along the way you lose the spark that started it all, you know, that creativity and that communication. But let's face it, it's Sundar Pichai's new baby, right? Because the two boys have retired from active management. And in a way, you know, they've reached big time when they got hauled into Congress yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, day before
yeah.
yesterday, or was it on Friday?
Yeah, all four
about,
of them, right?
Yeah, running. About how big tech they have become. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Now stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. And that was There She Goes by R.E.M. of the, what's their famous song, Chuang?
Shiny Happy People.
Shiny Happy People. Which was actually quite a kind of an anthem in the 1990s, right?
It was, yes. But it's also showing our age in the
age.
Collective.
Yeah. Anyway, good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning here with Kusu Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. Well, we're going to be talking about, the Doom Scroll. Have you heard of this, Chuang? And it's an article in the Washington Post. And I think it's particularly meaningful in these current times, because unfortunately, we seem to be bombarded, and the word is bombarded, right, by bad news. And of course, it's all COVID-19. A lot of it is COVID-19 centric. So, you know, you've got headlines, 19 million people infected, unfortunately, yeah, around the world. Yeah. As many as, 700,000 people have passed away as a result of this disease. There's global recession. Even Malaysia, we're feeling the pinch. Unemployment is at all-time high in almost every country, Malaysia included. 6.5% likely.
It's always
US double G. Have I depressed you enough, Chuang?
No, because it's not new. If you've been a journalist long enough, if you've been around the block a couple of times, you realize that the most read news is usually the bad news, right? Man eaten by prehistoric elephant, for example, right? And then it's like get 17 million likes and 15 million shares, right? Anywhere around the world, you go from Asia to Europe to North America to Antarctica, the bad news always sells. I think it's because of this, right? Because it releases some adrenaline in your brain. right? You go and search for it. I think that's what the psychologists say. But it's also because I think a lot of people, they're a little bit negative in nature. They always look to fulfill their prophecy that I think everything's not awesome. And they,
so it's the glass half empty mantra.
Yes, there's a lot of people who are glass half empty. And then what is worse is that today you've got artificial intelligence that fulfills that prophecy, because the more bad news you click on, the more it will serve you.
It's the algos, right?
Yes, the algos. It's the algos. So I think the point of this Washington Post story is how you break free from it, on the assumption that you want to break free from it in the first place, right? And my solution, okay, because I never like to read too much bad news because it does, it you know, mucks around with my brain, is I go look for comedy on YouTube. And my favorite go-to channel is Michael McIntyre.
Okay.
Have you heard of Michael McIntyre?
No, I have not.
Very
actually.
Funny. Go and look him up.
I'm sure it must be like full of adult humor like you, Chong.
No, not really. there's a lot of different kinds of comedians. He's a bit surrealistic.
Okay.
But he's a bit everyday as well.
All right. Yeah. Which is true. I think, you know, somehow we get into this cycle whereby we just feed on the bad news. And apparently it's a psychological thing. It's how, in a way, we kind of get addicted to it, and it's our coping mechanism.
Yeah.
But the point is, you're right. How do we break free from it? And firstly, okay, this is assuming, like you say, you want to break free from it. I think the thing is, the number one thing is to put that device down.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's probably the fastest and easiest. But we all know putting that device down, and let's leave that name, the name of the device unnamed, whether, you know, it's always going to be a challenge, right?
Yeah.
Because it's you can't help it. It's so addictive.
Yeah, so you know, everything happens in the mind, right? Locust attack in Africa. Unless you're being attacked by locusts, right? It's not going to affect you. Riots in Minnesota. You're not in Minnesota, right? Financial markets tumble. Gold crashes.
Gold is almost 2,000.
Okay,
one good news.
Okay, dollar crashes by the most since May, right? That hasn't really affected you. Do you earn in US dollars? No, right? So I tell negative people, I said, look, whatever happens, the sun will rise, the birds will sing, the grass will be green, and the sky will be blue, right? Most days, lah. Yeah? Okay? And it'll still be warm and sunny in Malaysia, right? So
Yeah. Everything
happens in your mind. Everything.
And I think what you also bring out a very valid point is, in a way, you have to surround yourself with this positivity,
you have to.
Because otherwise the bad news will really, really get to you. And then you get into this spiral of almost despair. So like what you said, during COVID-19, I purposely sought out stories about Malaysians being particularly kind, you know, who went out of their way to help people, whether it was to feed the homeless, whether it was, you know, even things like these internet companies that try to get the farmers directly onto online, you know, offered their services for free, the hawkers for free. And I thought, okay, there are always going to be stories, good stories, despite, I would say, quite horrendous and scary circumstances.
100%, man.
It's like the human resilience has to be there. So we need to seek out these stories sometimes rather than, I mean, the reality is the reality. It is bad news out there.
Yeah,
we're not going to sugarcoat
for
anything.
For sure, for sure. But it's like that makcik yesterday, right, in Kuala Barang, who served that very tired cyclist. I love that story because, look, at the end of the day, there's still very, very nice people in this world who will give you a warm, you know, dinner.
Who probably
right?
don't expect anything in return.
And exactly. So she saw that this guy was tired, served him his nasi dagang. Bob's your uncle. Fantastic, right? And he says, I'm not a restaurant. I'm just like, my kids are next door. Would you like to be there? We're saying, what? Fantastic, right?
Yeah, so but the point is, like, how do we then as humans, I mean, or like, be mindful about it that, you know, we don't get into this scroll of doom, as what it's called. So at night when we're lying in bed, we're just, you know, flickering through our phone and we just keep going on from one bad news to another piece of bad news. And the worst thing is you go to bed with bad news in your mind.
Well, the thing is, right, that's why last night I had a nightmare. I was woken up at 3 a.m, couldn't go back to sleep because I dreamt the polar bear was going to eat me. Do you know why? Because I was watching all these, like, bow hunters, right, who are being attacked by bears in, like, Nebraska, right?
So the point is, don't watch scary stuff before you go to bed.
Yeah.
Have a positive attitude. Be mindful of what you scroll on your phone, you know?
Yeah, I also want to say, right, for the glass half full people, of which there's a lot in this world, right, they will see any negative scenario as something to capitalize on, right? Mm. To who you can be opportunistic on. Because what is business? Business is essentially something that is done better, faster, cheaper, more efficiently than the last time.
Yeah, you spot that opportunity. Absolutely. And you just go for
and it. And there are so many opportunities around nowadays.
Yeah, so let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the News Bulletin. And to take us there is Patience by Tame Impala. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Shaoning here with Kusu Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. It's now 6:40 in the morning, and that was Heroes by David Bowie, the legend himself. And we're going to have a quick look at what's happening around the world. So this morning, I think, off, you know, looking at the headlines, the first one, of course, has to be about TikTok. I mean, I'm not sure about you, Chuang, but, you know, it's one of those apps that's just really taken over the world. And unfortunately, President Donald Trump has given TikTok until September 15 to finalize a deal to sell its US operations to Microsoft, who has, as of yesterday, confirmed that they are looking at this company or actually any other American company. Otherwise, it will close it down. So Trump said that the federal government will have to be paid a substantial part of that money as part of the deal. This is a new thing for me, though.
Yeah, so obviously it's all about the purported alleged spying that China's government is performing on America through its software companies, especially TikTok. And it's an especially relevant discussion because TikTok has got something like 800 million subscribers, okay? 800 million downloads, okay? So if you consider the fact that America has only got 330 million people, if even one half of Americans or their children have TikTok on their phone, that means China's government has access to half its entire households in the country, which is a big thing. But that's not to say WhatsApp or Facebook or Amazon or Alphabet or Apple are not spying on them either, right?
I mean, everyone has your data. Yeah, but let's be honest, as long as you download an app,
correct,
they have some data on you, right?
Correct.
Because they know where you are, what you search, what you look at, you know. And maybe even patterns in terms of household formation,
absolutely,
things like that.
Absolutely. So pot, meat, kettle, meat, pot, and let's throw...
They're all black.
Let's all throw glass stones in our glass house, right?
Yeah. But actually, this TikTok thing is not... They are not the only ones being targeted by the US president or anyone in the White House, because even State Secretary Mike Pompeo said on Fox News, no less, of course it has to be on Fox News, said that they're also looking at other Chinese software companies. So the likes of WeChat apparently is also going to be under attack sooner or later, because they're just saying that all these Chinese software companies pose a national security threat to America.
Yeah, and equally, you could say also that China has imposed restrictions on American corporations for a number of years. I mean, for example, if you go to China, you cannot get Facebook, you cannot get YouTube, you cannot, you know, this is like wall around it. Obviously, people get around it with a proxy service and whatnot, right? Everybody in China's got an account, but legally, you can't. So that wall has been up from one direction already for years. The other direction is only now just coming up.
Yeah, but how, you know, along the way, you know, all these concepts of globalization, that's all being crushed, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, for example, Chinese companies can list in America, they can buy American interests, right? But American or even any foreign interest can't buy Chinese companies directly. I think there's a quota, I think no more than 5% of foreign institutional investor interest in China. Then there's a quota to that, right? So that I guess that's what ruffled Donald Trump's feathers for so long, because it for him it's a bit one direction ish, and it's not the ban, right? Obviously, so it's coming to a head.
I mean, this is what we call, I think the new term is what, techno-nationalism?
Techno-nationalism. It's been in existence for a number of years from China's perspective. But now
it seems to be like America a full-scale war.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether the deal can be done by the deadline, which is supposed to be September 15, right? Because Microsoft themselves, they say they're going to aim to complete it. But it's not just only the US operations. It's going to be Canada, Australia and New Zealand. But I think, you know, it's going to be a challenge, and we don't actually know anything, including the price, which is the most important bit.
Well, August 2, 2020, which is 2 days ago, Microsoft on its own website said that it is following discussions with the president. It is committed to acquiring TikTok subject to a complete security review and providing proper economic benefits to the US, including the US Treasury. It will move to quickly pursue discussions with TikTok's parent, ByteDance, And in any event, completing these discussions no later than September 15, 2020, which is essentially 11 days from now.
No, September 15th.
Sorry, September 15th.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Like
okay, a month and a bit. And a bit, yeah.
Of course, the question is, Microsoft is a listed company, right?
Yeah.
So it has a fiduciary duty to its minority shareholders. Does this deal make any sense?
Well, 800 million subscribers, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but
right?
we do
it,
know...
It did buy LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, and, well, but we do know apps come and go, right? Once upon a time, an app can be very popular and then the next day it can go out of style like there's no tomorrow. So yeah. Who knows? But we'll definitely be following this story. But the other international news, of course, is just the fact that, and this is very somber information, that global coronavirus cases have topped 18 million as of Monday. And this is according to Johns Hopkins University, with the pandemic adding a reported 1 million infections every 4 days. And countries that have originally been able to so-called put it under control there seems to be new clusters forming, unfortunately.
Yeah,
so
like
Vietnam,
Australia,
Tokyo also. Yeah. In fact, we'll be covering the Australian story later on at 7:30 in the morning. So I think we still don't seem to know how this virus mutates, how it seems to spread. And I wonder, this is my own point of view, whether markets are just too overly optimistic on a vaccine.
Well, Fauci, Dr. Andrew, was it Andrew? Dr. Fauci?
Anthony,
yeah. He was in the news last night. He said that, he mentioned that there's over 100 vaccines being trialed right now. Only 6 have reached phase 3 clinical trials, which is advanced, right? But he's also said that it's not a silver bullet, right?
Yes.
And I think according to the definition, if you are able to reduce the symptoms in more than half of the people vaccinated, that is considered a success. But equally also, America has granted some kind of vaccine non-liability to the pharmaceutical company. So if they give you a vaccine which hurts you, you can't sue them.
Oh, okay. But we'll be following all these stories. But let us know what you think of any of the things that we discussed this morning. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Shaoning here with Khoo Swee Chuang, and this is The Morning Run, and that was Eagle Birds by the Black Keys. And at this hour, of course, we're going to be taking a look at the newspapers. And first off, I have the Malaysian Reserve. And the headline is actually this quite interesting one. Petronas withdraws appeal over landmark Sarawak tax ruling. Now, this has been going on for quite a while, actually, and it's over a disputed $1.3 billion tax bill, leaving in place a landmark court ruling citing state laws that could shape the way oil and gas resources are actually managed in this country. So as we know, oil and gas is a significant contributor to the country's GDP. I mean, Petronas and including all the other oil and gas companies, their revenue or whatever, their tax collection is about 20% of our GDP. Just imagine.
Which is a lot. Okay, I've got the HCO review in front of me. Always a good read in the morning. I've got some good news. Pavilion KL will welcome new brands to its fold despite the very bleak retail landscape. Some brands, including Steve Madden, Wong Shaoning, you will
it's
know this
brand.
It's
a shoe company.
Part of the Wolf Wall Street story. Remember the IPO that DiCaprio's firm did? Steve Madden shoes, right? They'll also have Daddy Cinema. Daddy Cinema is from China, right?
Yeah,
right?
It takes over, I think, what was GSC.
Yes, right. That's right. They better clean those chairs, though. Chloe, Bath and Body Works is coming in as well. Cam's Roast. Now, I'm not sure whether that's Keith Cam's chicken restaurant, but that's just joking. I don't know. But yeah, it is going to be good, right? Including Brunello Cucinelli and Kalia. And Karl Lagerfeld is in there as well.
But I just wonder what the footfall traffic will be like, right? I mean, let's face it. Look,
I think
you know?
The positioning for the return in footfall, right?
Yeah, but even there was this article actually in the South China Morning Post and also on Bloomberg yesterday talking about the demise of Orchard Road in Singapore, which
is
we
that
know.
Right? Wow.
Yeah, which is the equivalent of Rodeo Drive, right? I mean, like, or Bond Street in London. It's the premier shopping street. And apparently, it's empty now. And there are lots of shops which are closing up because there just isn't enough footfall traffic. And people have gone back to either suburban malls or to new malls. So the point about any mall is, how do you keep yourself relevant? How do you refresh yourself so that people still want to come? And well, that's always going to be a challenge, right?
How can the country stay relevant, right? Because Singapore is a retail paradise. Okay, and also online, the Malaysian Insight, talking about how this Rosmal corruption trial that's going on. A company called Jepak Holdings, the partner there, Ryan Razul Abdullah, he alleged in court yesterday that the former education minister, Manzia Khalid, asked for a reward, or habuan in Malay, for helping the company secure a hybrid solar project to supply power to Sarawak schools. And he demanded 20% of the project's total value, which amounted to 250 million ringgit.
Allegedly.
Okay. Which means it may not have happened, but equally it may have happened.
Allegedly. And I'm looking at the Malaysian Insight this morning. And for most parents, this is probably news for you, or if you haven't already seen it. Apparently, 2021, the school year will begin on January 20th. And he said the delay in reopening schools is to make up for the days lost due to the shorter year-end holiday this year, and also because of the postponement of year-end exams and SPM.
My wife was so incensed when she saw that.
She's like, oh no, they're going to be at home for longer.
Yeah. Stay-at-home mothers, you know, obviously the less time spent around noisy children, the better. So originally we thought it was December 19th to January the 1st, right? Only 12 days. Fantastic, right? Back to school, off you go, don't have to see you anymore, right? And then, bam, add another 20 days to that equation. Sorry. Okay.
But the other thing I want to know is, for parents, is this going to be a nightmare, right? Because, like, how do they...
Not necessarily. I suspect the government may have also have ulterior motives.
Okay.
For example, the holiday, the whole leisure industry, right? Because you want to take your holidays and blah, 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 right? It could be chuti-chuti Malaysia, which is good for the economy.
But for those who are working, I mean, maybe there's a bit of a challenge in terms of getting, you know, the childcare required, you know.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm sure for a lot of kids, they were like, hooray, more time at home.
We haven't told them yet. So as far as they're concerned, they're going back to school on January the 1st.
I like the way you torture your kids, Chung. You're a very evil parent. But meanwhile, the New Straits Times has a headline, and it's on restrictions return amid a COVID-19 second wave in several countries. Malaysia also tightens controls in four sub-districts. And I think this is a very good reminder that if we basically forget all our SOPs, we will end up in the same boat as what you're seeing in Melbourne, Tokyo, Hong Kong. And, you know, probably, I'm not sure, second wave seems to be even more scary and harder to control than the first wave.
Which is why the Star is going with this headline this morning. It only takes one. And unless you, if you think this is stating the obvious, well, it's very important because this whole R factor, according to our health section, right, it only takes one to infect 20 in mere days. That's why Kubang Pasu, Padang Terap are under lockdown, these sub-districts, because of the second wave.
Yeah, but how long, I mean, how challenging is it going to be actually? You know what, in a way I'm saying this because there's this, psychologists say there's this COVID-19 fatigue.
Yeah, that's why Victoria, right? Victoria has been in lockdown for 3 weeks. They've just had, 700 new cases over the weekend? The Australians have had enough, mate. I'm going to go out. I'm going to hit the beach.
Well, not anymore with Stage 4 being implemented in Melbourne, and it's something we're going to be talking about at 7:30 a.m. But that's all the news in the papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by, of course, more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Peter Lungri, the CEO of Lungreen Capital, to help us make sense of global markets. BFM 89.9.